It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's Riverfront, one word, for 20 bucks off.
What is going on, everybody? This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is everyone's good friend and mine, the Podfather, Bill Lack. Bill, you just kind of celebrated a 29th anniversary of sorts. What was that, yesterday?
It was Friday. Yeah,
it was Friday. Okay, you want to introduce that
for people that are old, like Chad Dotson and myself, that are old timers. That I really kind of started a lot of this stuff with the Reds listserv list and a Bengals listserv list, which predated Red Leg Nation. And the 29th anniversary of the time I started that was on Friday for both of those listserv lists.
That's a long time ago. I mean, I was a teenager, so I'm not, you know, I'm no spring chicken by any means. So I'm, you know.
Chad was in his undergrad, I think, at UVA. Either that or he was at Georgetown when I started it. I can't remember which. And that's how I originally met Chad, so.
Either way, I mean, you're pretty much to thank for all of this, you know, all this that we do here at the Riverfront. I mean, obviously what you started turned into Red Leg Nation, which became the Riverfront, which is, you know, what we all do here on the podcast and everything like that. So appreciate everything you have done. Again, there's a reason that you're called the Podfather. So again,
I appreciate you guys keeping the old guy around.
I mean, somebody's got to be the crutch of the old guy. I feel like I'm the guy in waiting for that, but I've still got a few years. I think, I mean, I'm still in my mid 40s, so.
If you look up curmudgeon in the dictionary, there's my picture.
Although Garber kind of fits the mold too a little bit.
Oh, I think Chris is much less curmudgeon-y than I am. He's much more of a positive guy than I am.
It's because he's got younger kids still. I mean, he's That's got right. a handful of years on me, but I think his son's the same age as my oldest. So
yeah,
we'll blame it on kids for keeping you young while aging you all the same. Anyway. If you are watching this right now live, you guys are watching this on either watching this on Facebook, watching this through Twitter, or if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe. YouTube.com/RiverfrontCincy. Smash like. Again, you're not allowed to hit like. You have to smash like. I don't make the rules. I just try to abide by them. We're here on another good day. This is a victory drink. These are no tears in my beers. So Bengals pulled out a bit of a barn burner, 17-13. Suffice it to say, it was a really, really weird flow to the game. Bengals started out on defense. They looked like the same old Bengals we've seen for the first month and a half. Seahawks absolutely just drove down the field. Everything they wanted, scored a touchdown easily. I don't think Kenneth Walker was touched at all. He was absolutely escorted through a hole big enough that you could have driven a bulldozer through on his first touchdown run. But then the Bengals come back, drive down. They nice methodical drive, score a touchdown, force the Seahawks to a three and out, and Bengals drive down again. Another surgical drive, go up 14 to 7 at 12:20 in the second quarter. And we're thinking this is going to be a shootout. I mean, that was my thinking, at least. What did you know? Where were you thinking, at least, you know, midway through the first quarter or first half?
Well, I was thinking, wow, this is the Joe Burrow I remember. You know, he was moving around. He was under, you know, wasn't under pressure a lot, but he was able to move away from the pressure that he did see. Balls were right here. I mean, they were right where he wanted them to be. The offense was playing well. The ground game still stank, but the offense was moving, and there was no sign that they were going to be able to stop our offense today. And then the gears all changed.
Yeah, we'll get into that here. I don't really know what to make of what happened to the Bengals offense. Again, the first half, Bengals went touchdown, touchdown, then punt, punt for the next few drives, and that was it until halftime. One of the drives, that was a punt. Burrow was 3 for 3, but they were just short completions that, you know, only netted, I think, a total of 9 yards before they punted. At one point, he had 15 straight completions. But going into halftime, it still felt pretty good about where they were. It was 14-10, I believe, at half. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, with how Burrow looked all of last week and the first half, you were thinking, you know, listen, this, you know, offense looks like they're doing a lot better. This looks like the team we were expecting. Next, it was 14-10 and a half. I looked at the box score and got, I don't know how to read, apparently. But after halftime, it defense, I mean, it went absolutely sideways in the second half. First drive, Burrow tries an ill-advised back shoulder throw to Chase on the very first drive, and they were playing it all the way. Easy interception, punt, punt, field goal, punt, punt, and then one play for the victory formation. And Burrow's accuracy was just completely off, just missing passes, not getting a whole lot of help from his playmakers outside of Chase, but that's unfortunately kind of what we've been seeing a lot of this first half. Tyler Boyd made a really nice showing in the first drive, and I don't remember hearing his name again after his touchdown. Do you?
I think he had one more catch in the second half, but I'm not positive. But I think laying any of the blame on the receiver, Burrow was just terrible after the second drive. He was terrible. I mean, and it wasn't all due to pressure. I mean, he was just off on his throws. He was behind the guys on a lot of throws. It just didn't look like Joe Burrow. Everybody can have an off day, but we're not used to seeing Joe Burrow have an off day unless there's something physically wrong with it.
Yeah, it was just completely weird. I mean, we knew the Bengals weren't going to be able to run the ball well. They've got an awful, awful run game so far. And Seattle's incredibly stout against the run. They averaged, it was coming into the game, 3.18 yards a carry. And the Bengals ended up getting just about that, if I'm not mistaken.
It was close to that, yeah.
Yeah, Mixon was 12 for 38. So, again, that's just over 3 yards a carry. And Chase Brown was, what, 1 for 4? Burrow was 2 for 4. So, yeah, right, you know, just a little above 3 yards a carry. So, and it really wasn't pressure. I mean, Bengals gave up 3 sacks. They were all in really quick succession. He gave up 2 sacks in one drive.
Yeah, two plays, I think.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and the next one, I think, on the very next drive. But most of the game, I mean, he had plenty of time. He was moving. It's not like he was a statue that, you know, that we saw the first handful of games. It was just completely off. I'm sure it was something. Yeah, Seahawks have a lot of talent on defense. They've got a really young secondary, but they do have playmakers. I mean, Jamal Adams is a stud there, safety, and he came back from his concussion. And without really having too much tape to see or, you know, a whole lot of analysis to kind of take a look at, I'm not sure. Again, I'm sure they changed some things up scheme-wise, But outside of that, it just looked like Burrow was completely off his spot.
Yeah. And it happened all of a sudden. It was very, very strange. It was very odd.
Yeah.
But with the schedule, where they're going into on their schedule here, the offense has to get a lot better.
Yeah, it's just refinement. And again, hopefully because Burrow is looking, if he's not 90% healthy, then he's got to be close to it. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure that he's not going to be doing much of anything outside of just getting treatment over this week. Because again, they're heading into the bye. They're at 3-3, which is, considering the start that they had this season 0-2, this is about as good as you could hope. They've got an incredibly difficult stretch coming out of the bye. First two games are at San Francisco and then Buffalo.
Here
at Paycor. That's two really, really tough games. Although if the 49ers that showed against Cleveland show up, then you know that bodes well. Now, granted, there was weather and guys were going down left and right, but
and there was a pass interference bullshit pass interference penalty. Or unnecessary roughness, or it was hitting
a defenseless receiver.
Worst call I've seen in a long time, and it changed the game.
Yeah, I saw the tweets or X's, but whatever the I don't know what the hell you call it on Twitter now, whatever the hell. But I saw a lot, and then I saw the video of it. I mean, the pass literally just passed the receiver, like it went through his hands, incomplete pass, and the safety, it looked like he let up. Like he did it.
And it was all shoulder. It was no head. It was not, and he didn't. It was just terrible.
Yeah, it's refereeing. It's, and again, this is kind of pulling an aside and kind of off topic, but refereeing looks about as bad as it's been that I can remember.
They've gone so, it's like they've gone so far to protect people that they're affecting games and when they shouldn't be. The rough and the passer call on the Bengals today, I thought was a bullshit call.
Yeah, it was absolutely weak. But then they completely missed one on Burrow. Burrow was getting wrapped up and tackled.
Second guy coming in.
Exactly. The guy jumps on, like, absolutely dives into his head and neck. Never mind on the first sack, just a hit. He got rid of it. Jamal Adams comes down on his head and neck. And that's,
yeah, that's if you're going to get on,
if you're going to get on DJ Reader for putting his whole body weight on Geno Smith for a roughing the passer, first off, how is somebody that big supposed to contort their body to let weight up
in the air
like that? Yeah. You do something like that, and they're gonna end up twisting the quarterback's knees because they're trying to cradle them to the ground. It's infuriating. Nobody knows what roughing the passer is. It's everyone's just interpretation. And if you're not gonna, I think something like that, a play that's a personal foul, that's something that I think needs to be reviewable. I hate reviews. I think it muddies up the game, and it takes too long because a lot of people don't know what a catch is.
Yep.
But on a personal foul, something that's that big of a game-changing play, I think that should be able to be reviewed. I mean, they tried that with pass interference a few years ago, and that was an absolute catastrophe.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts?
The other thing I think what we've got to be able to count on, though, is at least consistency from the crew inside the same game.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, a strike zone in baseball. I don't care what you call, just be consistent on what you're calling. And this is the same thing. You know, like you said, Joe got hit once and no call, and then they had the questionable one on Reader. And yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can throw a flag on every single play. I mean, there's holding on every single play. There's illegal contact by, you know, by the defense on every single play. You can call offensive pass interference on every screen play because there's a pick or you know, somebody's downfield blocking, and you don't want to get to the fact where, you know, to the point where you're looking at everything absolutely so granular and it's taking away from the flow of the game. But something that's that big of a play, that game changing, when there's so much interpretation, it's just infuriating. And a game this close, so those kind of judgment calls are magnified, and it's a pain in the ass. There's no other way to put it.
Yep.
But again, then we talked about the Bengals defense, about how, you know, first drive, Seattle went 11 plays, 73 yards, pretty much right through them, pretty much anything they wanted to do for a touchdown. After that, three and out, punt, 8-play punt, 9-play field goal. They get the ball back at the end of the first half. They were I think they're trying to rush downfield real quick for a to try to set up a field goal or something right before halftime. Cam Sample came through, got a sack, and they ended up just kneeling it out. First drive after the Bengals, or in the second half after Burrow threw a pick, Geno Smith threw a pick, then field goal, another interception. That was the one by Hilton, had the second interception, and then punt, turnover on downs, turnover on downs. So the defense, while, you know, missing tackles is still an issue, and again, I think it's going to be an issue because they've got so many young guys in the secondary, and that's who's missing these tackles. They looked really good. The birthday boys, Andre Yosivas and Cam Taylor-Britt, today was both of their birthdays. They both made plays, which was humongous. Yoshi got his first touchdown, and Cam Taylor-Britt had interception, return back for 24 yards, several pass breakups. They had him following DK Metcalf, just I think more just because Cam's the bigger, more physical corner that they have outside of him, DJ Turner. Obviously, Mike Hilton is not the physical specimen at 5'8", 180 pounds. And Cheetah, who just, he's not back all the way from his ACL to be able to trail someone that size down. I thought he played fantastic. Again, he got beat over the top late by Metcalf, didn't end up costing them. But what do you know, again, what are your thoughts on Cam Taylor-Britt? At least coming back after having some rough play off and on this year, I thought he was fantastic.
He was the player of the game today for me. I think the world of him. He's getting better. He has bad days and or bad plays or whatever. I think it's interesting though that they're still going at him right now and not at Awuzie most of the time. Yeah. And I'm kind of surprised by that because he's made enough plays on the ball that I would have thought that they'd be going after the guy coming off the knee surgery, and they don't seem to be as much to me anyway. But he had a big day today. And the Hilton and the interception he made was quite a play.
Oh, man.
I mean, Metcalf quit on the ball, and Britt just went, he was between Metcalf and the ball, and he just reacted to the ball and made a heck of a play on it. And the earlier interception by Hilton was a nice play by him, too, where he played the ball really well.
Yeah, he absolutely read that. Hilton read that one perfectly. I've yet to see a really good picture of Cam Taylor-Britt's interception because he was absolutely like vertical or horizontal, mm-hmm. absolutely yeah. laid out to make that catch and then picked it up and ran it back about 24, 25 yards.
Yep. Heck of a play.
Yeah. He still has a little bit of gambler in him and that cost him on a play. Metcalf, he went for the pass breakup, kind of tried to dive in front, break it up, and Metcalf grabbed it and then ran upfield for another 20 yards.
Yeah. He reached for it, missed the ball, and he was out of the play then.
Yeah. That far away. Play the player, not the ball. But right. Again, that's something I think that's just going to be who he is. And you're going to have to live with something like that occasionally happen, but he's going to be more and more consistent. So
the only argument I have with him on for the most part this year, we were talking about it off air, is I think he's missing a lot more tackles than he has in the past. And actually the whole Bengals defense, I think, is missing a lot more tackles than they did last year. The other thing that bothers me, I see a lot more guys trying to rip the ball rather than tackle guys. And I have no problem with trying to rip the ball if he's on his way down. You know, if you got three guys got a hold of him and somebody's trying to rip the ball, but if you're the only guy there, don't be ripping the ball. Make sure you get the guy down or you're giving up 5, 6, 7 more yards. And to me that just seems like fundamental stuff to me. And that's something that we shouldn't be dealing with 6 games into the season.
Yeah. It's a little frustrating. It's one thing that if you've got Logan Wilson has the guy wrapped up, you know he's going to get tackled. So, yeah, by all means, swipe away. Try to rip it away. I mean, Jermaine Pratt's fantastic at that, but you can't just go yanking at the ball before he's actually wrapped up. So, another play by Yosivas, I think it was I'm not sure if it was a punt return or a kickoff return. It might have been a punt. He was gunner. Someone had the return man wrapped up, and you saw Yoshi, yanking and ripping at the ball. That's great that they're teaching that. I mean, you can tell that's a huge point of emphasis. But again, I mean, you need to have somebody to have them wrapped up before you start doing that. Because again, yeah, that chances are they're not going to fumble and you're going to give up, extra yards. It's going to give a first down or push them into field goal range, whatever. So,
yep,
work on that. Real quick, just going to revisit our keys that we laid out on this week's show on Thursday that Greg and I had. Offensive, the keys, get an early lead. Yes and no. I mean, the offense was fine to start the game off, but defense gave up a touchdown on the very first drive. So I guess you can kind of give them a check on that, because the offense went down and scored on their first two possessions, and, you know, 12-20 left, or yeah, 12-20 left in the game, they gave up, or they had the lead that they never gave up. Second offensive key was to keep feeding Jamar. And that's another kind of mixed bag. He had 13 targets, but again, due a lot just to inaccuracy, he only had 6 catches for 80 yards on those.
I didn't see many, if any, plays where he shouldn't have thrown the ball to him when he did. He just didn't get it there.
Yeah, there were a lot of plays that were like behind the receiver, and it's frustrating. It's like,
yep.
There wasn't rush in his face, you know.
It was an un-Jo like day.
Yeah, and that's, if he's healthy and like, if, you know, if he came out absolutely, you know, feeling as fine as he could, and I didn't see any issues. I didn't see him hobbling. He still put the contraption on his leg when he was on the sideline, just to kind of keep it. I don't know if it's just like a heating device or just kind of massaging thing to keep it loose. But there's no reason to think that he aggravated anything. He was just off for pretty much 3/4 of the game. So third key that we had was defend stunts and twists. This is what the interior of the offensive line has been getting killed on all year. Seattle had 3 sacks, but I really don't think any of these twists, any of these stunts were any of the issue. On one of them, Cordell Olsen got absolutely bull rushed all the way to China. And
he's not very good.
No. It's weird that a 4th round pick from a small school that was older than everybody else hasn't panned out. No, that's not weird. That's
or that they haven't tried to find somebody that would be better.
I'm curious. It didn't mention Orlando Brown went out with a groin injury in the 4th quarter. He's been dealing with it for a couple weeks. It shouldn't be anything major, and especially with the off week, he should be fine to go in 2 weeks when they play San Francisco. But they brought in Cody Ford as the replacement, and I'm wondering, because Cody Ford's a guard. I mean, he's played tackle. He's not played tackle very well in the NFL when he's been out there. I think he looked okay. I mean, I didn't see anything glaring. He's only out there for a few drives, and they were off the field so quickly anyway. He was, you know, you couldn't really, wasn't really any time to see any glaring issues. He's a guy that I would look at if they're want to get better play from the left guard. Cody Ford is the guy that I think that they would look at to replace him. Obviously, Jackson Carmen is an absolute afterthought at this point. Lyle Collins is still out there looking for a job. I wouldn't mind bringing him back if there's any thought that Orlando Brown's injury might be something that's going to linger, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So
it is interesting, though, that Ford was their first choice.
Yeah.
When Brown went out, that's an interesting decision. It's not who I would have thought would have went in there.
No. Deontay Smith was active, I believe, and he's their swing tackle. And the whole thought was, if anything ever happened to Orlando Brown, they would move Jonah Williams back over from the right side to play the left. And I wonder if it's more he's playing so well on the right side. He really has. I mean, he's still going to have trouble with certain physical traits, but he's played pretty well. He's been the best offensive lineman pretty clearly on the right side. So maybe they just don't want to mess with him and, you know, decide if you're going to play, you know, play weak, just play, you know, play weak in one spot instead of weakening 2 spots.
Right.
So
we'll find out. We'll find out in 2 weeks how well Jonah's playing out on the right tackle.
It doesn't matter who's playing the offensive line. I absolutely fear for Joe Burrow's safety. They're going to need a long snapper instead of a center just to get it, give him 15 yards, just to give Bosa and the rest of that incredible defensive line,
yep,
keep them out of his space. So, yeah, I mean, the Bengals pretty much did, you know, what we thought our 3 keys to victory were. I mean, against stunts weren't an issue. They fed Jamar 13 targets. I don't think they moved him around as much as they did. Again, they had T.T. was pretty invisible most of the game. I think he had 1 catch
and a drop.
Yeah, exactly. And he got dinged for offensive pass interference on the 1 drop that he did have. No, T.T. 4 targets, 2 catches for 10 yards. So I missed another catch. But again, you had to figure he was going to be in and out of the lineup anyway because of the injury. Because it's the first catch that he made, it was a clutch third down. He got hit hard in the ribs, and he's got a fractured rib. That had to hurt like hell.
Didn't see anything out of Irwin today after having such a good game last week.
Yeah, he had zero targets.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, Travion Williams had two targets for crying. Like Drew Sample had a target. That was on the one play when Burrow was running around and kind of running circles around the defense, ran backwards. I really want to see a stopwatch to see how long he had. He probably had 6-7 seconds to throw the ball. And the only guy that was open, I mean, must have had tremendous coverage downfield, was a dump off to Drew Sample, and didn't, you know, he had no chance to turn up field. So
let's see, the Sample had a catch. Does that make him our leading receiver at tight end for the season now?
Probably. although Irv Smith did outgain him. Smith had one catch for 5 yards, did have a drop. Sample had one catch for 4 yards. So,
I thought Smith would be okay. I thought my biggest concern with Smith was him staying healthy, but he's been invisible. I don't know why that is. I have no idea why that is.
It's pretty infuriating. He missed a couple games, which was, again, I mean, that's been the knock on him his entire career. But last week he was healthy. He had zero targets when Burrow threw the ball all over the field. This week he only had two targets and he was healthy. You know, I would be completely happy if they were to just cut him, let him go. He's not a noticeable enough blocker.
Right.
And I mean, Drew Sample's a fantastic blocker. Like, people need to quit worrying about where he was drafted. Yeah, he shouldn't have been a second round pick. Bengals thought they were getting a guy. I mean, he had a lot of cool, great measurables. I mean, he actually matched up really well coming out of college, physical tools and things, all the measurables with George Kittle. And they thought, hey, maybe this is a guy. Yeah, he was underutilized because Washington doesn't throw the ball much. So he didn't get a lot of chance to catch. So that's why they drafted him at least a round early. But obviously that hasn't translated. But he's absolutely got a use on a team. I mean, he is blocks almost as well as most offensive tackles. He's a good run blocker, and they use him as a fullback or an H-back.
Right.
So,
My guess is he will be playing a lot against the 49ers, helping out.
I would like to see them use him more as like the move, the H-back, the move back, mm-hmm. or, fullback role, whatever the hell you want to call it. Bengals haven't had fullback since Jeremy Johnson.
Jeremy Johnson, yeah.
I think that, yeah. I was going to go back to Lorenzo Neal, but I forgot about Jeremy Johnson out of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Yep.
He
had a couple really good years for the Bengals.
Yeah, that was that mid-2000s, 2005, 2006, I think?
I couldn't tell. It's all a fog to me.
I know. I think we had season tickets from 04 to 07 or 08, and I think that was when he was around him. That was the first good Marvin Lewis teams. So, but yeah, I'd like to see him used as a lead blocker back role because they can't run the ball. They can't do short yardage with Joe Burrow or Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon stops his feet and he's getting tackled immediately.
He's the easiest running back to tackle that I remember the Bengals having in my lifetime.
It's so crazy because last week he had 25 carries for 83 yards. Again, that's not a good day. I mean, that's, 3.2 yards a carry, which is where he was today. And everyone was, on the socials like, oh, Mixon's back. He looked great. Like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Everything was he didn't have the 15-yard gain and then the negative 1-yard gain and the 2-yard gain. But he's not a good running back. He's a decent pass catcher, but.
And his pass blocking has been better this year than it has in the past.
But I really think a screen door.
That bar's pretty low, but
yeah, I mean, Casper the Friendly Ghost did a better job of pass blocking than
be honest with you. I know it won't happen, but I'd like to see them give Chase Brown more of an opportunity in the backfield, just to see if things got any better.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done a whole lot in what limited roles that he had. I mean, he had one carry for 4 yards and one catch for 8 yards today on
two. Yeah, I think he had one rush last week too, if I remember right.
But you're not giving him a lot of Chance, yeah, he's not doing a ton with it, but it's not working with Mixon. Mixon's an old running back. I mean, yeah, he's only 27 or whatever, but that's an old running back.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of wear and tear, and you're not getting better from him. Like just you're not getting a lot. Like, what are you hoping to see from him? To him to revert to last year when he wasn't very good? I mean, he was good in 2021, but they ran the ball a lot more, especially early in the season, to protect Burrow, and they had the team, you know, they kind of tried to cater the team a little more towards that way. They're not catering to be a power offense running team, and that's the only way he can run the ball.
Right, and that's what, you know, Brown is supposed to be a guy that can move the pile, can run hard, can do all those things. And if your offensive line isn't set up for run blocking, you want somebody that can move the pile a little bit. Mm-hmm. A guy that can gonna run a little harder, a guy can be a little harder to tackle. It's a bad mix to me with this offensive line and Mixon.
The problem is all other running backs are similar style, though. I really wish they had a small, more of a scat back type. Everyone brings up Gio Bernard. Everyone loves Gio Bernard. Gio Bernard wasn't a great player. Like, he was solid and did what he did well, but he wasn't a great running back. He wasn't a great, like, receiver. He had great hands, but he wasn't that elusive. I really wish they would have gotten out and got Keaton Mitchell in the draft, or Ty J. Spears, someone who's an actual change of pace guy, someone who can squeeze through those little holes, you know, or bottled up in the backfield, someone who's got the speed and change of direction to break it out the backside. They don't have that guy. Chris Evans is explosive catching the ball, but he's not that guy running the ball. Chase Brown, I don't think he's that guy either. He's another bigger, stockier back. Right. And we know Mixon isn't that guy. Mixon doesn't do explosive plays. He never has.
Right. Isn't his longest career rush like 32 yards or something like that?
Mixon's, I think it's like 60, but it wasn't even a touchdown. And he hasn't had a run longer than 50 yards in a couple years.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I would have been fine if they moved on from him after, longest rush in was 60 yards, had in 2018 and 2021. I would have been fine if they would have completely moved on from him. Not even talking about any of the off the field stuff,
right?
Because, you know, with say what you want about stuff getting dismissed or the other stuff that's still in court, and he's just not good enough to keep around. I don't know. He doesn't fit the team. It's again frustrating. Our defensive keys that we had coming in the game, number one, hell, it could have been 1, 2, 3, and 4, was the tackle. And again, they tackled better. They still had some missed tackles. They also, Seahawks have some pretty good running backs and some guys after, you know, with the ball. So I don't think the numbers are going to be as bad this week as they have been the last few weeks. And it's something they're still going to work on. They've got so many young guys in the secondary, and it's guys that are just being over aggressive, kind of over pursuing. It's better, not great, but I think it was better today than it has been, but we'll see that when all the numbers come out probably tomorrow.
Yep.
Second key was to defend misdirection and kind of broken plays that had change of direction. I didn't really see Seattle do any of that, which is crazy because the Bengals have been terrible. Any kind of counter or teams have been running all kinds of trick plays, getting everybody flowing because Bengals are over aggressive and over pursue. I don't recall one play where Seattle tried that. Do you?
No, I don't either. There were a couple of cutback plays that I think it was just because of the flow of the play. I don't think it was a design thing.
It's very surprising because, again, like Zach Charbonnet is a quick, good running back. Kenneth Walker III is a fantastic running back. And they didn't have that great of a day running. It was, I think they averaged 3.2 yards, if I'm not mistaken. 27 or 25 runs for 87 yards, 3.5 yards per carry by Seattle. So
I'd take that all year.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that they changed their scheme so much as just Seattle didn't try to expose them on that front. So last key was pressure. Geno Smith was front four. They pressured him from everywhere. So many guys had sacks and hits. Sam Hubbard had one sack, five hits. I think this was his best game in his career rushing the passer. Not a guy.
Especially in the second half, they really put the pressure on in the second half today.
Those last few drives when Bengals needed the defense because tight game, the offense is absolutely shit in the bed. Everybody was. I think everybody got a hit on the defensive line. But yeah, Hubbard with 1 sack, 5 hits. Logan Wilson with a sack. Dax Hill with another hack, with another hit. He's turned into, and it struggled last year, and Jesse Bates wasn't very good at it. He's fantastic coming off the safety blitz. I don't know the last, with as fast as he is, like, he looks like he's absolutely shot out of a cannon. Who's the last safety you can think of that was that good coming off the edge?
I have to go all the way back to somebody like Tommy Casanova.
That's going a little bit back. That's before I was born.
That's going all back. Yeah. But last time I was on here in the preseason, I had questions about Dax Hill, and he's played much, much, much better than I had anticipated he would. He's been a very big surprise to me. I'm really happy for the most part with the way he's played. I think he's done a nice job.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers show it. I mean, he's got interception, he's got a sack. It's, you know, he's in on a lot of tackles. You see his physical ability, and that was never the question. It was more of the issue of he had a lot of stupid penalties on special teams last year that you hope is just kind of him just trying to do too much, and you know, having they're all on special teams. I don't think he barely played
right,
you know, on defense outside of a few games he was forced into because of injury. But I mean, he looks like a future star. I mean, he looks like the best, like sometimes he looks like the best player on defense. He knows how to get home. I mean, Jesse Bates, they'd send him on blitzes all the time, and he'd never get home. You'd see him get picked up by the tight end or by the
running back.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, another guy with a ton of physical talent, but he couldn't, you know, I don't know. I've never played football. I've never played safety. Certain guys know how to get home. I mean, Ed Reed, I mean, that guy pretty much do everything, and I'm not going to compare Ed Reed to Dax Hill, but some guys just know how to take the right angle. Or
Palomalu.
Yeah, certain guys that just, they could do everything, and Dax Hill has that ability, and he's shown it. I think he's, after Trey Hendrickson, I think he's been the defensive player of the year so far going into the bye.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Or Taylor Britt would be in the running also for me.
Yeah, he's more big plays and giving up more big plays.
Yeah, but that's cornerback. That's being a cornerback.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's going to happen. I mean, you're playing guys that are absolutely fantastic. We do have some bad news. I do have somebody who has jumped on here. I didn't even send him a link. He's just pirating his way on here, but we're going to bring him in here. Tim Daniel, host of Late Night Reds. Tim, what's happening, buddy?
Oh, this isn't my show?
It isn't. That's why we have orange and black.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Hey, Tim.
It's okay.
Hey, what's up, buddy? Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm good, man.
I had to see my good friend Bill, who at our live show bought me a High Noon that I'm just now drank yesterday that my wife put in her backpack and took home. So,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Somebody had to keep you out of trouble. I'm glad your wife was there to do it.
That's right. What a fun weekend for me, right? Notre Dame won, the Bengals won. So that's 2 Pete Carroll's wins for me this weekend.
There was no one there to push Reggie Bush, I guess. Although it didn't really matter. You guys pretty much kicked the shit out of USC.
That was a cool
weird weekend in college football. I mean, I don't know, we're Bengals show, but Louisville played really, really well against Notre Dame. That wasn't awesome. Notre Dame
they
struggling. I mean, they played fantastic. And they come out and lay an egg and get smoked by Pittsburgh, who was 1-4. I think they were 1-4 coming to the game. They were so bad they lost to UC.
Right.
Unfortunately, my team, the Bearcats, just
who lost to Miami.
Yeah, exactly. That's
who are really good. Apparently. Actually,
yeah, they're 5-1. A good MAC team still shouldn't beat a mediocre or worse Big 12 team. But
we'll see how good Miami is next week. They play Toledo next week. That'll
I'm
be a good
really
game.
Excited for that game.
Is Toledo good?
They're 5-1 also.
Okay. Yeah. I used to follow the MAC when they were, you know, a relevant conference. But, you know, Ball State would come out every here, every now and again. Northern Illinois had a couple good teams. I mean, hell, Miami was a really good team when Roethlisberger was around. But they just, with as stratified as college football has been,
absolutely.
The G5 schools outside of what was the AAC and now are the best, you know, now are the, you know, all those teams moved on. Like the other conferences, they just weren't any good. So I kind of lost touch with, you know, with who was any good. I know Air Force is having a fantastic season right now. They're running for about 7,000 yards a game.
Yeah, they're gonna beat Navy next weekend about 100-0.
I know. Navy's got problems for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have any input for us, or do you just want to come on and thank Bill for a drink he bought you a month ago?
Well, there's that. What was the topic? Do you guys have any insight on what I should be discussing?
I mean, the Bengals. I mean, it's a live recap show. It's Bowling Green. Have Bowling Green done anything since Joshua Cribbs?
They do have cool jerseys. I gotta give them props there.
Well, they look like the Browns.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of why I ding them. It's the orange and
what was it called? Word art like Eagle logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never been to Bowling Green. I've seen it from the highway, and it looks just like a stadium, a handful of buildings, and nothing but pastures around. I mean, I'm sure Bowling Green is a lovely school. Go Northwest Ohio.
Yeah, right.
Something.
Well, I think as I was hopping on, you guys were talking about Dex Hill a minute ago, and that was like my bat signal, I guess. but yeah, I think that, you know, Bill kind of made the mention of like all the questions that were kind of surrounding him after his first year, because I guess it felt like he couldn't get on the field, and maybe it was just more a Jesse Bates thing is maybe what we're seeing more and more. Maybe he just hit the playbook really hard in the offseason. But either way, I've just been really impressed with him. So, you know, Sam Hubbard obviously wins that game today with how he plays on the stretch. But you got to think, if Dex Hill doesn't almost intercept that ball at the goal line, like, we're probably sitting here talking about why we should not have Zach Taylor come back. I'll do that anyway. But
Well, they lose today, the season's over.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, they won today, so they get to play, you know, so they have another game that's important in 2 weeks. So, but if they had gotten beat today and went to 2-4, it was done.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is confident that they're beating San Francisco, even with how bad San Francisco looked today, and even with the Bengals getting a bye to, you know, rest up and, you know, and get Burrow hopefully as close to 100% as he's going to be the rest of the season. San Francisco looks that damn good. I mean, they're fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they also lost McCaffrey and Debo.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of guys drop. I have Debo on my fantasy team, and he's tanking me because he's gotten knocked out of a few games.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's so weird because I think, what are we at the point now with this team? Are we just at the point where we just want the consistent game where both teams' sides put together? Because in Arizona, the offense was lights out, and then today, the defense is lights out. The Rams game, the defense is lights out. The Ravens game down the stretch, the offense was really, really good.
Yeah.
To kind of get them back in the game, potentially win it. So I think we're just kind of waiting for that both sides of the ball thing now, which is a super football, like, easy thing to say. But I do believe that if this team does get to that point where they can put together like the both sides of the ball and just be efficient, then the sky's the limit for them. It's definitely going to be tough with San Francisco and Buffalo back-to-back weeks. But, I mean, you know, they're 3-3. It's not like they're out of it. If you look across, they're still the best quarterback of the four teams. You know, I know he didn't play his best ball. I don't really have faith in Kenny Pickett. You know, everyone told me going into the season, like, he was going to be really good. And every time I've watched the Steelers, he's a check-down artist. So I don't really worry about how the Bengals match up against them if they play their.
But it's all the offensive coordinator's fault,
right?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can call
shitty, right?
There's a lot to be said about shitty play calls. I mean, we're dealing with that here, but quarterback still has to make plays. I mean, you can point to them being 5-for-5 on drives in the preseason, him having a perfect, you know, 158.3 quarterback rating, but you're playing against fake teams.
You could probably make the case Carson Palmer may have had an MVP if it wasn't for Bob Gronkowski. So, you know.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we miss Bob Gronkowski here.
Well, the other thing I would say too is, you know, if we could win one of these two coming out of the bye, that'd be huge.
Huge,
yeah, absolutely.
But as long as nobody else in the division is running away, that helps too. You know,
yeah,
and you know, that's why you root against every team in your division. And that's why it pissed me off that Cleveland won that game today. I had that one chalked up as a loss, and I think it would have been if it hadn't been for that bad call that we talked about earlier. It
almost worked out perfectly because it was a physical game. You don't want injuries. You don't want other guys, guys to go down. But San Francisco is a hell of a lot easier to play if you don't have Deebo Samuels and
right.
Christian McCaffrey to game plan against.
Yeah.
So it's, Browns, almost knocked them out and still almost lost the game.
I don't know who they play next week.
The Browns.
I can pull it up real quick.
The 49ers.
Oh, okay. I was going to say the Browns play.
Did you guys talk about the fact that Malik Willis forgot that he had to throw a football on occasion?
Did not. I just watching the looking the stats of that game, and that was kind of so glad he didn't have to watch that game. But how come he couldn't have been the quarterback against the Bengals?
I know.
When they played him.
So, Bill, the Niners are at Minnesota Monday Night Football.
Oh, good. It's a Monday night game, though, so it's a short week for them. That's good.
Yeah, but Kirk Cousins in primetime.
Yeah.
He's Andy Dalton in primetime.
Watch it. Andy Dalton had a 3-touchdown game in primetime once.
He did. He also had a 0.0 quarterback rating game in primetime.
I was at both of them. I remember.
Jeez. Denny Price talking about Bowling Green. They came before the Browns, to be honest. But nobody comes before Deshaun Watson. Ask all of his massage therapists.
Oh.
Sorry. I had to.
Need a rim shot for that, you know?
No, that.
We're not that kind of a. Oh, sorry. Never mind.
Different kind of tongue lashing than what they're talking about.
Different kind of rim shot.
Oh God. Enough. God, and then it's my fault too.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, we were talking about just keys to the game, and Greg and I had the Bengals needing to pressure Geno Smith with just their front four, but they were able to pressure from everybody. I mean, they had got linebackers had pressure, Hubbard got it, or Wilson had a sack, Dax had a pressure. But again, guys all up and down the line. Cam Sample with the sack and two hits.
It was great today.
Yeah, Cam Sample had the game of his career.
He was great.
The other thing was they got push up the middle.
Yeah.
Especially late. Yeah.
Cam Sample got his sack, I think, at least got some of his pressures.
That just changes the whole outlook. If you can get pressure, and we talked about this, I think, the last time I was on. If you can get pressure up, from the middle, it makes it so much easier for the guys coming in from the ends. Because the guy doesn't have anywhere to go. He's just a sitting duck back there. And they got that today. And should have had one more sack if they hadn't had that crap call on Reader.
That call is terrible. I don't think Geno Smith, if he's, whatever team he plays on next, I think if they come to Cincinnati, I think he's going to sit that game out. So his two starts at Paul Brown /Paycor are this one, where he was not very good. Mm-hmm. And do you guys remember that Jets game when the Bengals won 49-9 and Marvin Jones had 4 touchdowns?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely went off.
Yeah, he was the Jets quarterback in that game, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's been around for a long time. God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
He may just tell the coach, I'm not going to Cincinnati.
Yeah, don't the Lakers were like, we don't even want to go to Orlando after the bubble. Like, just don't schedule us for that game. Like, that's going to be Geno Smith.
So, again, I mentioned it before, birthday boys, Cam Taylor-Britt and Yoshi both had huge plays on their birthday. Probably Cam Taylor-Britt's most impactful game so far, in his young career. Do have a question, and I put up a poll on Twitter. Going into the bye, what's your biggest concern? And I had Burrow's health, defensive inconsistency, lack of tight end productivity, and lack of running back productivity. I'll ask you you two here. Tim, what do you think is Bengals' biggest concern going into the bye? What do you want them to try to shore up or get better?
It should be running back, right? But they won last year without a backfield, really. So the tight end thing you can definitely see is starting to hurt them, especially in the red zone where you had the Hayden Hurst. I don't think CJ Uzomah was necessarily the world's greatest pass catcher, but had good chemistry with Burrow.
Was productive.
Yeah, exactly. And so what you're seeing now, and I really wanted Irv Smith to be good, not just because he was on the Bengals, but I got to know his dad a little bit when I used to cover Notre Dame. So I was pretty excited he came here. It just doesn't look like he's there. And I know, that throw that Joe had then, in that last drive to him that went through his hands was a bad throw. It was an atrocious throw.
Was, yeah, the was off target.
We were saying, Tim, we were saying earlier, I'm not sure Joe made a good throw after the halfway through the second
quarter. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. It just wasn't his day. And I don't know if this is what the Seahawks defense was doing. And if so, kudos to them. But tight end is definitely hurting them. If there's a way that I joked a couple weeks ago about mailing in for Marvin Harrison. If there's a way they can find a way to get Brock Bowers, you know, no one's going to be upset, but that's not happening.
Look at productivity from first round tight ends. I can't think of, you have to go back to who, Tony Gonzalez?
I mean, Eifert was a Pro Bowler before he got injured.
Who?
Eifert.
But he had injury problems his entire, in terms of actually living up to the value of a first round pick. Gronkowski wasn't a first rounder. Kelsey and Kittle were mid rounders.
Kyle Pitts might if he had a quarterback.
But he wasn't. He had Mariota thrown to him. I know he had Mariota thrown to him last year, and he was used more of a decoy.
Who's also not good.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I would love the Bengals to see what it would cost to get
Kyle right. Pitt. Yeah. What can we do to make that happen? That's the tight end they all need.
There are guys out there. There are teams out there that are throwing in the towels already. The Bengals don't do anything in the trade deadline, unfortunately. And that's becoming more and more of a thing. I mean, it's never going to be as big as NFL trade or as a Major League Baseball trade deadline or even NBA's trade deadline. But it's becoming more and more of a thing where teams are, you know, making moves to upgrading their team. And Bengals, like they've been throughout most of their history, are behind the times. They value their draft picks, I want to say too much, considering the fact that there are certain positions that they're just fucking terrible at drafting. Oh, that's a line.
Or that they waste picks on when they didn't need to for certain positions, like punter.
Punter, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not – people are worried about Brad Robinson, and he's been bad. He actually wasn't terrible today. Five punts, it was 45 per. Rookie punters struggle. Especially in the first half of the season, he hasn't cost them anything. He didn't cost them the AFC Championship game. That was Drew Chrisman, and he wasn't a rookie. They traded to get an extra pick so they could get a punter, and I don't like drafting punters, but I'm still okay with it in hindsight. To me, it was doubling up on defensive back when you drafted multiple defensive backs and then doubling up on receiver while neglecting a couple other spots. Again, I mean, look at Charlie Jones. I mean, punt return touchdown, made an impact in the second game of the NFL. Yosivash, has made catches in back-to-back games, had his first touchdown. I think he's going to, be a decent piece, but did they need both of those guys when they didn't draft an offensive lineman, which again is like, they're terrible drafting offensive linemen, but you need to keep throwing darts at a board there. And you have no depth at tight end. You had to bring back your second and third third string tight ends or guys that you brought back late in the process and Drew Sample and Mitch Wilcox. This was, again, I keep harping on, this was a historically deep tight end draft. You didn't have to get Sam Laporta or Michael Mayer in top of second round or wherever those guys, I can't remember where Mayer went, but I know it was middle in the second round. Yeah. You didn't need to get someone that high, but I've got people dragging me on Twitter from something that I posted I made right after the draft about Laporta being drafted in the top of the second round. People like Detroit fans, which is like, I'm a random Cincinnati Bengal account, and you're coming back after me 5.5 months after the draft, and drafting tight ends early is not a smart choice. Like, whatever. But I mean, all the guys that went in the middle of the draft, fucking Bobo. The tight end, he former wide receiver turned tight end. He had a couple huge catches. Josh Wiley from UC had his first two career catches, including a touchdown against the Bengals. I mean,
there were
tight ends to be picked. Yeah, tight ends to be picked, and the Bengals booted on him to go with Irv. It's weird. I don't get it.
Well, you mentioned bringing guys back. I mean, Drew Sample literally had like a horrible injury last year, and they were like, can you move your leg? Yep. All right, cool. Let's do it again.
Yeah. Exactly. And again, when we talked before you came on here, he's a useful player. I'm completely fine.
Yeah.
You disregard where he was drafted. Because again, he's on a second contract now. So where he was drafted, it doesn't matter. he's the best blocking tight end in the league. You need a good blocking tight end. So cool. He gives you nothing in the pass game. Fine. But,
well, and then he ought to be playing because we're not getting anything in the passing game from tight end right now anyway.
Right. I honestly believe that. Make him the starter because, you know, he's not going out for a lot of routes. And again, don't line him up as an inline tight end. We're talking before. Line him up as an H-back or, you know, move kind of a move tight end or even as a fullback. You can't trust Mixon, even though he's looking better this year. You can't trust him in pass blocking. So
you want
just put him in as a fullback on third downs, and he can leak out if need be. But
you want your sample of the old classic Ethan Carter role?
I'm Ethan Carter. Wow, better than, at least he's not Marco Battaglia or Sean Brewer. Ooh. Wasn't he the chain smoking guy from San Jose State?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds like such a something from The Replacements.
Or the early 2000 Bengals.
He'd be wary.
Or who was the other guy? Was Chase Kaufman, the guy from
Missouri. Oh, yeah. I was stoked when they drafted him.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he had a lot of ability, but just all of the mental mistakes and just, what was that the first Hard Knocks the Bengals did? You just heard Jonathan Hayes, the tight ends coach, Chase. Like, they just made an absolute remix tape of him just saying Chase, like just yelling at him, fussing at him for doing the wrong thing, just not being there mentally.
Could have been a great meme.
Yeah. There's like three Bengals draft picks and it's kind of in that same time frame that I was like, man, this guy's gonna be so good, and they weren't. And he was one of them. PJ Dawson, I was stoked. Oh,
he was one of the guys, like, physical
I don't
freak.
Even remember,
I mean,
him.
Yeah. From TCU.
Linebacker from TCU.
He's a terrible person. He had a lot of a lot of issues with the men in blue, shall we say.
Ah.
Yeah. So,
and then you remember Lamont Thompson, the safety that they like Marvin cut?
Yeah.
Like his first year.
Yeah.
Second round pick.
Yeah. Physical freak, but
yeah.
Marvin was terrible to have rookies with. I mean, he absolutely destroyed John Ross's career.
Yes, he did.
John Ross did not have a problem catching the football at Washington. He was a complete wide receiver. He comes here and just gets absolutely buried by Marvin Lewis and just ruined his career.
Well, hey, guys, I have to go drop and do my show real quick. I just want to stop and say, hey, I saw you guys were recording, so I had to sneak in. Bill?
You weren't watching from 8 o'clock on?
No, I was watching stuff. I was with the family. Okay. Bill, always a pleasure. Joe?
You too, Tim.
I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Tim, I appreciate you. See you, buddy.
See you guys.
All right. Bill, any final thoughts before we get out of here? Real quick, I've got I didn't get your thoughts. What are your final thoughts on the biggest question?
I really have more of a problem with the running back situation. When the offense was really clicking last year, and as much as at the time I wasn't a P. Ryan fan when they kind of started switching over and giving P. Ryan more time, when he was playing well, that's when the offense really seemed to click to me. And I think if we could get, and I don't know how it would happen with this team, with the personnel we have now, but I think a running game would help this offense a lot. And that's what we need coming out of the bye. We've got to do something to get this offense back on track and be consistent.
Yeah. And what's funny is P. Ryan is probably available. He's not being used much. I mean, he went to Denver thinking he was going to get a bigger role. I mean, a similar contract to what he was going to get here in Cincinnati, and he's not being used, and they're a bad team. I mean, they're already shipping guys out, preparing for trying to get more draft picks for next year's draft.
Yep.
He can be had. I don't know if they were going to cut him, you know, release him midseason, but he can be had probably for a late round pick. I would absolutely be aboard bringing him back.
If I could get him for a sixth rounder or something in a second.
Absolutely. It's Trevion Williams does not have a future with this team. Chris Evans does not have a future with this team. So it's not like you're going to be replacing someone who's got a bright career ahead of him.
Right.
Chase Brown. Yeah, fine. But he's not. I mean, Chase Brown isn't getting a ton of snaps anyway. And Trevion, you know, losing out on snaps to Trevion Williams by and large. So I would be 100% against or 100% for bringing back Samaje Perine. Cause I mean, fantastic blocker, not explosive by any means, but he's a guy who's, you need 4 yards. He's going to get you 4 yards. You need someone to pass out in the swing pass or, you know, screen pass or something like that. he's going to make the catch and he's going to turn upfield and you know, no dancing. He's going to keep his feet moving.
And he isn't going to get tackled by one guy grabbing his leg.
Yeah. And he absolutely has the most fantastic beard in the NFL. My wife loved him. I thought he looked like he should be a professor, like an English professor or something. Just with the beard, he looked very astute, very studious. I miss that guy. You know, just a gamer. So he's not going to blow you away. He's not going to be a game changer, but he's going to give you everything he has, and he's going to do everything you ask of him. In the poll that I put on Twitter, 39% had both Burrow's health and lack of TD productivity as the biggest concern. 18% had running back productivity, and only 4% had Bengals' defensive inconsistency. I kind of think the defensive inconsistency to me is the most pressing and what's cost them in at least, you know, one of the three losses. Offense was bad in the Browns game, the Titans game, so it really didn't matter what the defense did, but I mean, that cost them in the Ravens game. I mean, they hit a deep pass over top, you know, to Zay Flowers because bad coverage. And it's, I think a game like today is a good game to be going into the bye with. I mean, going in on a positive note, still stuff to learn because, you know, they still made some mistakes. And I think they're more likely to be more consistent, but that's been more concerning to me. I'm not as worried about the offense playing poorly in the second half. Yes, Michael, absolutely. I mean, I wish I could grow a beard. There's a reason mine's thin. I could not grow mine out at all. It looked terrible. I'm not worried about how the offense looked today. Burrow looks healthy. He's moving around just fine. They looked great last week. I think this is just one of those games to where something that the defense did that they just weren't able to keep, weren't able to match up on is what caused them to look bad. So tight end productivity, they'll find a way, I think. Again, I'm completely cool with them just getting rid of Smith during the bye week, giving Tanner Hudson the spot. He looked the best. I mean, he's an older guy, so Tanner Hudson isn't the guy who's going to be a Bengals starter for any length of time, but he's looked the best catching the ball of anybody. And Mitch Wilcox is versatile. He's a decent blocker. Drew Sample's a great blocker. What does Irv Smith do to stay on this team? I don't think anything. So move on from him. His contract isn't big. Just bring someone that can give you something.
Yep.
Running back productivity. It's been bad. Bengals have shown several times during the Zach Taylor era that they're able to tear up a game plan midstream and, you know, find some way to make things work. I think 2019 was either his first year or second year, 2019 or 2020. Terrible running the ball. They switched up their, did a totally different scheme. They did the wide zone, moved to the wide zone scheme, and they had a much more efficient running game. Last year, they tore up the wide zone scheme and went to a more, you know, downhill game, running straight out of the shotgun. The second most efficient run game in the NFL last year. So I think they'll be able to get something out of the running game the second half of the season. It's not going to be great. It's not going to be as good as it was last year, but I think they've got a little bit of trust built up with me, you know, that they'll be able to find some way to get some productivity.
Okay. from your mouth to God's ear.
I'm hopeful, but again, they've done it twice before. You know, whether it's changing personnel or using personnel differently, whether it's doing a totally different scheme, I don't know. Again, Bengals are not out. Bengals offensive line, they weren't brought in to be road graders.
Right.
This isn't a power run team, and that's fine. Like that's not who they are. They are who Joe Burrow wants them to be. That's a team that's going to spread them out. If they're going to run the ball, it's going to be on an RPO. It's not going to be lining up under center. And although they did that a little more this week than they usually do, but they just need to get some more efficiency. I'm not worried about the offense. You know, give Burrow another couple weeks being healthy, and you know, bye week comes at a good time. Because they've got back to back wins without running the ball well, they should be able to find something to, you know, to find some way to be a little more efficient. So I'm hopeful, at least somebody has to be. Bill, any final thoughts before we get out of here for the night?
No, I think like you said, I think this is a you know, a lot of people probably say it's a little early for the bye, but I think the way they're playing, this is a good time for the bye, and it's a good time to have it right before you get into this tough part of the schedule, so that hopefully they can iron out any of these problems that we're talking about that may, that can be ironed out, you know, with the offense and even some of the small things with the defense. I wonder on defense, I wonder how much time Scott's got left at safety, even though I'm not sure they want to go younger in the safety, in the secondary. And that's what they, that was what the option would be if they went to battle over Scott. I don't know how much Battle played today. I know I saw him on one or two plays, I think, but I don't know how much he played. I don't think he played as much as he did last week.
I was actually a little surprised he didn't play as much this week, but I saw him making a positive play. I saw Nick Scott get torched. Maybe it was missed coverage and he just happened to be the near safety because of a blown coverage by one of the one of the cornerbacks, but he's not shown well. I think if the Bengals are going to make a move, it's going to be coming into the bye and play Battlemore. Because I mean, he's obviously got the future. I mean, he's a rookie. He's incredibly intelligent, and that's been his whole thing. Is he's a smart guy. He's going to pick up the defense. He's great at the nuances. He's great at the instinctual play, whereas Nick Scott is more the physical specimen, like really fast, more, you know, but he's always going in for the big hit and misses tackles because he doesn't rep. So if they're going to make a move, I think this is it. And Lou Anarumo hates rotating guys, especially in the secondary. So I think depending on, you know, how they view things coming in, if it would not surprise me one bit to see Jordan Battle as the starter and starting throughout the rest of the season, and you know, unless there's an injury. So
yeah, if they do make that change, it won't say much for their signings between Smith and Scott.
Yeah, and I mean, Orlando Brown has been
okay,
decent, but not, you know, considering he got, you know, biggest signing bonus the Bengals had given away to that point.
Yeah,
and one of the biggest, you know, most guaranteed money the Bengals had given away to that point, and one of the bigger contracts to offensive linemen, period.
Right,
the way it was structured, it's, you know, he's been fine, but you hope there would be better. So,
yep.
All right, folks, it's it for our live post game show. We will be back here. I'll have Greg with me, dropping probably Thursday morning. Again, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com, Riverfront Cincy. Hit like, all that fun. Smash like, sorry, smash it, smash like. It would be fantastic if you guys joined our Patreon family, patreon.com/Riverfront Cincy. We have so much fun in our Slack channel during Bengals games, during Reds games, during absolutely moments of nothingness. We have a lot of fun chats just about TV shows. We had some crazy last week, and I can't remember what we were talking about, awful bands. We had a lot of Nickelback talk, and I had to throw some Kiss slander in to get Tim going. Limp Bizkit got brought up, so it's a lot of fun. Our Slack channel, join us, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, for as little as $2 a month. We have a lot of fun. It'll be awesome if you guys joined us. Outside of that, that does it for this week. We will see you all later in the week. Hooday! Bengals are into the bye at 3-3. 2 weeks, get to play the Niners. We owe them a little bit of back pay over the Bengals history, I think. Yeah,
forever. Exactly.
So, all right, everyone, peace out.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.